Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace, and this is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. We'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there's inspiration from quitlet authors, experts, and sober heroes. Hi, this is Genuinely Grace. Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I hope you've had a great week. We've got a fantastic guest lined up today. I've been talking about Dale Pinnock, the medicinal chef, for ages. I've known Dale a long time. He's really prolific. He's got some great books out. And of course, you've probably seen him on TV. So he's going to be giving us some great tips and advice on nutrition. And we're definitely going to talk as well about what happens after you've ditched the booze. And Dale's going to share his own story as well, which is fantastic. He's got a new book, by the way. I got it in my hands. Dale Pinnock, Fakeaways. I mean, it's such a great idea. So he's doing budget-friendly versions, if you like, of takeaways for everyday home cooking. So, you know, some of the kinds of things that we love eating out, but then we kind of they end up being a little bit unhealthy sometimes. So now you can just buy the ingredients and you can make them at home. So you've got falafel here with the tahini dressing. He's got a version of hummus bowls. What else has he got here? Beginner's sushi rolls. Some fantastic ideas. So we're going to chat to Dale Pinnock a little bit later on. Now, unusually for me, we're doing something a little bit different this week. I've teamed up with Sainsbury's, and this episode is sponsored by Sainsbury's, who've got the most fantastic selection, it's ever growing, of alcohol-free drinks. And I really love the fact that you can get this stuff in the supermarket. You haven't always got to go online. Really, really brilliant selection for anyone who's choosing not to drink. Maybe you've decided you are going to drink less over Christmas, or you're going to start right now and ditch the booze. Or maybe you want to just have some fantastic drinks and still drive home from the party. The great thing is there's no need anymore to compromise on taste and flavour. So some of the drinks that I've been sent for this, I hadn't tried before. So I thought it'd be really nice to actually talk about these drinks by inviting a few friends over. And I know it's not the telly. It's not quite the same. But I thought, you know, I can get a couple of mates. We can try these drinks out. You can see what everybody thinks. So you need to kind of imagine Nigella at home. Have that thought in your head. It's probably not quite as glamorous. And then after you've heard this, we've got Dale Pinnock, as I say. And we've also got a chance for you to grab a redemption code so that you can get some of the drinks that I've talked about for free along with your online shopping. So that's really cool. Here it is. Here's my little review of some drinks with some friends. So here we are then with Carolina Christian and Simon, and we have our beautiful bottle of Calino. Right, so I want you guys to try it first on its own, you know, like you would a gin.
A neat.
Yeah, neat, exactly. Neat. So we've got a little slice of lemon for you there.
Thank you.
See what you think of that.
It smells
lovely.
What's that smell like?
Yeah. So it's a lovely bottle, isn't it? I mean, this is the kind of thing that... Well, how do you feel about it? If you were driving, Christian, what do you reckon?
That actually got a taste.
Do you know what? That has a lovely smell, but there's a hint of banana.
I smell banana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Banana, yeah. That's what it is. I thought it was like a sweet aniseed kind of thing.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. You don't like bananas, but you like that.
I don't like bananas. But
well, funny enough, in Uganda, they make banana gin.
Do they really?
Warren gin. It tastes just like gin, but has a hint of a... Yeah. I like that.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, some of the botanicals, some of the sort of gin alternatives don't have as much taste as that, I don't think.
Definitely not.
So this is that. So that's the Calino on its own. So now, check this out. This is Dash water, okay? And as you can see, this is infused with wonky lemons. It's really important that you note that they're wonky lemons. Yeah.
What does that mean, sort of?
Well, it means you're reclaiming the lemons that otherwise
may not
have been loved.
They're not perfectly formed.
Exactly.
To the supermarket.
Would you like to try a bit of
a
wonky lemon with a bit more of your Calino? There you go. What's like that?
That's really refreshing. That with loads of ice and lemon in a really nice glass. That's just a great alternative, isn't it, if you're driving?
Definitely not too sweet.
Which is really nice. Well, I like tonic water and I like sparkling waters.
But what I like about this is not sweet. Mm. It's not hideously sweet. And so therefore it doesn't disguise the flavour of the...
Gin alternative of the Kalina. So a win then, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Mm. That's great.
So there we were in Yorkshire with our friends Carolyn and Christian, and we thought we'd do it all over again, come back home, get the teenagers in, and we invited round Enid and Glenn, and we had another taste of the Dash water, which we loved, and also we tried some tonics. Right, so this is Rosemary Mojito from Sainsbury's, a refreshing blend of mint, lime and rosemary. All of the cocktail, none of the alcohol. Okay, well, what do you say?
Yeah, it's not bad. It tastes like a mojito, pretty
much.
That's
actually pretty good.
Oh, that's nice. It's not too sweet.
Great.
And
like
a couple of ice cubes on a hot day. That'd be lovely. And
can
a sprig of mint. Yeah.
Can you taste the rosemary?
Yes, it tastes a little bit herby, but not too much.
Oh.
And you can taste the lemon or limey lemon.
Lime.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's some interesting flavours.
Now, this is interesting. This Merchant's Heart I'm going to try a little bit with this, because this is tonic water with a hint of pink peppercorn.
Oh,
right, that's nice. I could drink that neat too.
Yeah, you could.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yes, and I'm going to try a bit of this. What's this one say?
Merchant's Heart.
Because that's nice and chilled.
And it is ginger ale.
Ginger
flavour.
All right, it's going to have a little bit. You don't want much.
Not too much.
Okay, so I'm going to try a bit of the. I'll try a bit of it neat.
Is this?
That's great.
It doesn't taste too sweet.
No, I love that.
Drier.
Mm-hmm.
What, the ginger
this
tonic?
One, yeah, definitely a drier taste. Yeah.
I like the pink one too. That's nice.
Well, I think these are definitely a winner. The Merchant's Heart tonics. I think they're fantastic. I love them. So we haven't tried any of this. Do you want one of these Dash waters up?
This one's actually sparkling spring water. Infused with whole misshapen lemons.
I like that already.
I can see the lemon bit, but how would you know a misshapen raspberry?
Well, you have to care. It's the one that needs lots of love. So these are cans, then, we should just describe, as it's only radio and not telly. We're opening up a can of Dash. Oh,
crack me a tin.
There it flies, let's try this then. So which one, what's this again? This is your misshapen lemon.
Misshapen lemons.
Okay. That's very subtle, isn't it?
It makes water more interesting when you know it's safe.
So it's sparkling spring water, and it's infused with, as you say, misshapen lemons.
Yeah.
So it's where all the little rejected lemons go.
Yeah.
The same.
They're not bright enough for the real ones.
Sorry. As long as they don't have issues.
So you heard us there trying out some of those great drinks, the Merchant's Heart tonics, which are lovely. They're in lovely little glass bottles. The Kalina non-alcoholic spirit, the ready-made mocktail, rosemary mojito mocktail with lime and rosemary, and I think the hero of the piece, don't you? The Dash water. I can assure you that no lemons were harmed in the process. We love that wonky lemon water. So we've got a special offer for you with that. So Sainsbury's are offering an exclusive redemption code for you to claim a free 4-pack of those drinks we were talking about, the Dash British Sparkling Spring Water infused with wonky lemons. That's the whole title. And you can get a free 4-pack as part of your next online shop. So what you have to do is follow the link in the show notes. So if you go to the show notes, if you type Alcohol Free Life Podcast, hit the show notes, you'll see that link there. The code expires on 31st of December, so you've got plenty of time. And up to 200 lucky listeners are going to be able to claim this free product with their shopping. You do need to note that the minimum spend for the Sainsbury's online shop is £25, and you'll need to set up an account so that you can place your order, and there's full terms and conditions and all of that, but you just follow that link in the show notes. So that's going to be good, isn't it? You get to sample a 4-pack of the Dash British Sparkling Spring Water infused with wonky lemons. It was really nice. I'm absolutely loving it. So let's get straight into that interview with Dale Pinnock, the medicinal chef. It's really lovely. I mean, I've known you so many years and interviewed you on Radio 2 and met you at shows and goodness knows what. And of course, read most of your books and seen you on the telly. You. And, and here you are. And it's so lovely to have you as part of this show, because we love, focusing not just on ditching the booze, but on everything else, really, the whole nutritional picture. And of course, it's so often when people first make this decision to stop drinking, that's often the first time they think, wow, okay, now I need to think about what I'm putting in and the good stuff.
The world just opens up.
The world opens. Absolutely, the world opens. Just tell us a bit about your background, Dale, and how you got into all of this kind of medicinal chef stuff, how you got that title, because it's a fantastic, you know, juxtaposition of two words. Just tell us how it came about.
Wow. I really got into it, I guess, like many people do, through my own health issues. It was from the age of about 10 or 11, the summer of leaving primary school to go up to secondary school, started getting really, really bad acne, and went to so many different specialists and different practitioners, tried all kinds of lotions and potions and antibiotics and different things that didn't really make much of a difference. Got to about 15 years old, and I was sat around at my friend's house one night feeling a bit sorry for myself, and his mum came up to me and said, look, unless you change what's going on the inside, nothing's going to change on the outside. And then she lent me a book, and it was Fit for Life by Harvey Diamond. I don't know if you ever read that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, gosh. Yeah. Yes. I remember that book.
That was a game changer. That just changed everything. I had that light bulb moment that actually we can actively engage in our own healthcare. We can take some degree of responsibility for our health outcomes. And that was it. That kind of changed everything. And then, you know, I read over 1,000 books in probably 12 to 18 month period and realized that I was pretty obsessed with this subject. And I kind of mucked about a lot at school. I mean, I grew up in the rave scene, and I was more interested in going to Fantasia and Dreamscape than I was paying attention at school. So I didn't really have many qualifications. I had to go and get like an access course, and then ended up doing my first degree in human nutrition, did a second degree in herbal medicine, and then did a master's degree in nutritional medicine. And then I've been cooking all my life. So the food became the delivery system for the information, rather than just kind of doing a PowerPoint presentation and saying, yeah, eat less of this and more of that.
Yeah.
If I can do something practical with it, then people have got some kind of reference point that they can actually implement straight away.
Totally. I mean, what's lovely about this, you know, just for anyone who's completely new to this concept, is that, you know, what we're really talking about here is the fact that food can help to heal us. You know, and I'm sure you and I have had this conversation before, probably many times, but, you know, for so many years, particularly in the UK, nutrition has been so far down on the kind of scale of where you look when it comes to ill health. And as we know, a lot of GPs in the UK probably get half a day's training in nutrition, if that.
Yeah.
And yet it's so important for everything, isn't it?
It is. I mean, but thankfully, attitudes are really starting to change.
Yeah, that's good.
When I was doing my master's, most of the other students on that course were GPs or gastroenterologists.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. So
it's a sign of the times. And then you look at the likes of, you know, Dr. Rupi, Dr. Hazel Wallace, those guys that that are GPs that are doing postgrads in nutrition. I think that, you know, doctors are faced day in, day out with the real tail end of the way in which our modern way of living is destroying our health. And they can see clearly that drugs aren't winning the war. I mean, like, I'm not anti-medication in any way, shape or form. I'm certainly not of the alternative mindset. For me, it's like if I go out outside of my office and get hit by a bus, the last thing I want to see is broccoli.
Yeah.
You know, I want morphine and I want it quickly. When it comes to the stuff that's really putting the biggest burden upon the health system, you know, the cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, that's lifestyle related. And that's not wagging the finger. That's not pointing blame. It's just a fact. It's just the way that we live in and the way that our environment is impacting us.
Yeah. And of course, what's great about the work you do, I mean, with your TV work and your books, I mean, Eat, Shop, Save is a great example of how you really promote good nutrition, literally for everyone. You don't have to have pots of money and always be buying everything, you know, organic. I mean, of course, organic food is great. But what you're trying to do, I think I'm right in saying, is really make, you know, this stuff accessible for us all. We can all take responsibility for our own health when it comes to what we put in our mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I think like so many people automatically think that if you're going to start eating healthy, it's all biodynamic grass-fed unicorn and wonga wonga berries from a wizard.
although that's quite a good recipe.
Yeah. For a Sunday lunch.
I like the unicorn.
But it doesn't have to be like that. It's just getting back to basics. It's just kind of stripping things down to to Whole Foods again, the kind of food that your grandparents would have recognised.
Yeah, exactly. And this sort of the problem that we have, of course, this is, you know, with the amount of junk food and processed foods we eat. You know, as you say, if you look back to if you look back to wartime, people were healthier, probably partly because they ate less and partly because they ate what was grown seasonally. You know, they ate what was in their garden or in the local allotment or whatever, and they also would have, you know, cake, I don't know, perhaps once a week if they were really lucky. They wouldn't have kind of loads of biscuits and crisps and sweets and all this stuff that has become so normal every single day in our lives.
I know, it's crazy. I mean it's been a long time, but I remember years ago, like working in offices and stuff like that, you would have a heap. There'd be one table in the corner of the office that would have any kind of imaginable junk food on it. There'd be tins of chocolates, tins of biscuits, and people just come and pick at it all day. And you kind of think it's those things in the immediate environment that makes those bad eating patterns really easy.
Yeah.
It's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah. Let's talk about alcohol then and where that fits into the picture, because there'll be a lot of people listening to this who are you know, but drinking too much. They know they're drinking too much, or maybe they've stopped drinking, perhaps even for months, maybe even years. And only now they're starting to think, wow, okay, you know, now I'm going to start thinking about my diet. First off, just tell us about your experience of the whole alcohol picture, where that fits in for you.
So for a long time, I was just the typical kind of good time person. So I would, at the weekends, see my friends and, you know, take a couple of bottles of wine, and it would all be very, very civilized, and it would all be very, very nice. And I was one of those people that was able to open a bottle of wine and have a glass and then have another glass the next day.
Yeah.
I was one of those weirdos. I mean, I can't quite understand that anymore. But, you know, a bottle of wine would last 3 days. And then when I started first really experiencing real kind of loss and real pain in life, the relationship went sour and the off switch suddenly broke.
Yeah.
So it started off, one of my best friends passed away. And then, you know, last year, my dad passed away as well.
Yeah.
And some of these things, the filtrate, that thing in your mind that's like, okay, that's enough for me now, just disappeared.
And so, in other words, you suddenly didn't have an off switch.
Yeah, and the one bottle of wine would be enough bottles until I passed out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know, looking, you know, retrospectively, I can see it's just a coping mechanism for the pain. It's just like a way of just shutting out all the noise, shutting out all of the stuff that just makes us feel terrible. Because
numbing out,
when it comes at you all at once, it's almost too much to deal with. And I sort of realized that now. And I was very lucky that there was no kind of cataclysmic event. I never once got behind the wheel after, like, in this situation. I never destroyed any relationships. I never let it interfere with work or anything like that. But it was interfering with my mental health and with my physical health to the point that I could no longer ignore. And knowing the things that I knew from a health point of view, I was very, very acutely aware of what I was doing to myself from a physiological point of view. But it was only when I actually took a step away from that, and, you know, not even thinking about quitting alcohol at that point, it was actually trying to address some of the things that were going on a psychological level. I mean, I was looking at the work of people like Johan Hari, you know, with a lot of his work on addiction and things. And you look at a lot of the things that drive that behavior.
Yeah.
I really struggled. I mean, because I did actually go to a couple of AA meetings and things like that, just exploring, not going like, yes, my world's falling apart because of alcohol. I was just like, look, I need to kind of figure out what's going on with this relationship.
Yeah.
And I actually refuted the idea that I was powerless in this.
Yes.
Like, there's no way that I'm powerless in this. There's no way I'm just going to surrender and let something take over. I was like, look, the buck stops with me. There's something about me. There's something that's gone wrong, or something that I'm not addressing, or something that some kind of need that's not being met that is clearly behind this. Of course, you know, you can say it's because I had a lot of grief and a lot of loss in my life. But so does everyone else, but not everyone hits the bottle. I mean, you know, it affects people in different ways. So it was clear that there was psychological needs not being met. There was so many things going on, and it sent me on a completely different path of discovery. I mean, I've always worked on the very, very physical level with nutrition and with things that are very biochemical, but it kind of put me onto almost like I guess a bit of a time of spiritual development again. Yeah, and spirituality was always a very important thing to me in my 20s. I was like a practicing Buddhist. I did all sorts of different things that were that kind of, that lined up with trying to make sense of the spiritual aspects of our being, but then lost track of that a little bit. And I think that was probably the start of my downfall with it. Mm. So it led me on quite an interesting journey. And now I'm at the point where my current attitude is I'm keeping away from it, because as far as I'm concerned, that relationship is probably still dysfunctional, and I'm healing a lot of things inside of myself. Maybe in the future I'll be able to go back to that old way of being where I can just take it or leave it and it doesn't really bother me. I'm not prepared to test that water yet.
Because how long ago was that, Dale? So how long is it?
This is less than 12 months. We're talking about 8 months. Yeah, all right. 8 months or so. This is fresh.
It's so interesting. There's a few things in there that I just want to pick up on. It's really, really interesting. I mean, one is that, you know, as you say, you are a functional drinker, you know, like we all are, or to start with at least. And we're able to leave some and drink normally. But what's interesting is this kind of inbuilt brainwashing in us all that alcohol is the answer. It's the answer to every celebration. It's the answer to every commiseration. And it's that thing that goes on in your brain that, you know, you're everything's terrible, or you're stressed, or you have grief, as you say, you turn to drink. Yeah. And it's so ingrained in us all. It really is incredible. That's just really powerful to kind of reiterate that for someone who was fine, you know, when something goes wrong in your life, which unfortunately that's life, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's when you turn. And it's also amazing that you were able to catch sight of that and to catch hold of it and step off what I call the booze elevator, you know, before it got too late, you know. Hats off to you. Amazing. And of course, you and I can have a conversation separately another time. But of course, I would say don't go back and test the water. Life is so much better on the other side. I'm a year ahead of you. And I can honestly tell you there ain't no point in going back
to test that
water, because there's nothing in it. But the other thing I just want to pick up on is that you mentioned this thing of sort of, you know, maybe there's something wrong with me, in inverted commas. That may not have been your exact phrase, but I think it's also really important to stress that there's two things here. One is that we all forget, even us really bright people like you with all these degrees and your scientific background, it's so easy to forget that alcohol is an addictive drug, right? Yeah. So there's nothing wrong with you. It's an addictive drug.
Yeah.
And the second you start to take it to numb stuff, which is very normal, it gets you, because it's an hideous addictive drug. Isn't it amazing how we forget that? How do we forget that?
You kind of think there's more deaths related to alcohol than there are any other drug on the planet.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like
if you turned up at a dinner party and started chasing a dragon, your friends would be like, "What the hell are you doing? What are you thinking? Are you insane?" But then you look at the damage that alcohol does to the body in comparison to things like heroin or cocaine or whatever. It's just heroin. We always hear the horror stories.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, oh, if you're addicted to heroin, then you're going around stealing car stereos and, nicking from your mother's purse.
Yeah.
It's like people do worse things than that when alcohol has really, really got the grips on.
Absolutely. It comes out as the number one most harmful drug when you take into account all other factors, you know, of harm to others, harm to the individual, harm to the economy, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Absolutely number one. It is incredible that we've all been brainwashed for so long. Also, I thought it was really interesting that you said that you knew, because of your background and the work that you do, you knew what it was doing to you from a physiological perspective.
Yes.
So just explain that to us, for those of us who don't have your background, you know, explain that really clearly, what it is doing to us on a physiological basis.
Wow, there's so many things. I mean,
so many, yeah.
Starting just with purely the physiological, because there was a lot of things. The physiological, you're going to get irritation to the digestive tract. That's something that's going to happen very, very quickly, which can affect nutrient absorption. It can really damage like key structures. You can get damage to the pyloric sphincter. So you can actually get like consistent reflux.
Yeah.
That in time can actually lead to like esophageal damage. You can actually get thickening of the inside of the esophagus, which, you know, increases your risk of esophageal cancer, for example. You can increase risk of stomach cancers as well. You can inflame the absorptive surfaces of the small intestine, for example. So some key nutrients will actually struggle to get into the body. Then obviously you've got damage to the liver. The liver is a very forgiving organ, and providing you've not got to the point where you're almost two-thirds scar tissue and you're almost at that point of cirrhosis, then it can come back from it if you abstain. But you will very, very quickly get an inflammation of the liver. You'll get inflammation of the pancreas as well, most likely. You can get alcoholic pancreatitis. And if that ends up becoming a chronic thing, then that obviously increases your risk of pancreatic cancer as well. And that is one you do not want to be getting. Not that you wouldn't be getting any of them, but I mean, it's the one with the actual the worst outcomes, really. It's a very, very difficult one to treat. Then cardiovascular health. It can cause huge amounts of inflammation within the cardiovascular system, both damaging the endothelium. You can raise LDL cholesterol. You can raise triglycerides, vasoconstriction. There's a whole host of things that are short-term responses to alcohol. But when you're constantly topping that up and constantly pushing those systems in that way, you can cause permanent damage.
Yeah.
The thing that scared me more than all of this, though,
anxiety.
It's the damage to my mental health.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and it was beyond anxiety. It was hideous. Yeah.
Really,
I never expected that.
That's interesting, because I've said several times on the podcast, you see, I didn't even realize the level of anxiety I had until I stopped. I no longer felt that anxiety. I hadn't realized how long I'd had it for. So I mean, I'm not at all surprised you say that. It's really interesting. I've heard of lots and lots of people who've come off antidepressants and all kinds of medication. Yeah, I'm not suggesting, by the way, that anyone does that, obviously. And I'm not saying that, you know, that alcohol always causes all mental health issues. Obviously, there are links, but it's complex. But it is a fact that I do know several people that have completely come off antidepressants months after ditching the booze. And I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, not at all. And it's, you know, and if there is any kind of underlying stuff going on, it's going to be like throwing petrol on a bonfire as well.
Yeah.
Because it does affect neurotransmitters. It does decrease serotonin. It does, you know, cause neuroinflammation. It does cause brain damage and actual damage to the neurons. So when you put all of those things in place, you do kind of ask yourself, how on earth has this thing become so normalized? But like, as you say, it's almost like there's an air of romance about it. Like for me, my poison was red wine. Mm. Red wine was my thing. And like when I first got into red wine when I was in my teens,
it's glamorized, isn't it?
It was like really, really sophisticated, and like all these grape varieties and these wonderful complex aromas, and you know, pairing it to food. All of that is just pretentious claptrap.
Totally is. It's just just fermented old liquid, right?
Yeah. It's rotten grapes.
Yeah. Amazing. It's such a fascinating story. And I love your take on it, because, of course, you have all this scientific knowledge that the rest of us don't necessarily have.
Well, with that, strangely, with that came a huge amount of shame. And that's the thing.
Oh, tell me about that. I didn't tell anyone. I'm sure you've heard me say this before. I didn't tell anyone at all for a good three months. Not a soul.
Yeah. And it's because when you're in the wellness industry, it's just like, well, of course you've got to have your life sorted out. Of course you've got to be on top of everything. Heaven forbid you should actually be having a bit of a crisis yourself.
Yes.
It's that's what I felt anyway. But then when I was actually honest about it, so many people were just like, that's amazing. What are you worried about? What are you worried about, you know, needing help and being in a vulnerable position like any other human being on this planet?
Exactly.
So, you know, it's weird. Like, again, it's those mind games that partially alcohol can fuel and certainly exacerbate, where you're sitting there, oh, everyone's going to judge me. I'm, you know, my career's going to go down the swanny if I open up about this, sort of this kind of stuff. And it's like, hang on, maybe I'm actually being given an opportunity to be able to help people now that I've actually been through this.
Totally. So what did you, in terms of, you know, sort of, what worked for you in those early months then, in terms of sort of getting your head sorted? You know, you said it, you obviously had to address some stuff that you probably didn't want to look at. I mean, I think what's interesting is alcohol does a very good job of numbing us out. And then when it's gone, you do have to face things. The good news, we should say, to anybody thinking, I can't do that, is that you become so much more resilient. You become so much more optimistic and able to deal with the crap that's thrown at you.
Oh, without a shadow of a doubt. For me, you know what? A lot of it was actually staring that shadow self straight in the face.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't, you know, there's no shortcuts. You know, I'm certainly not going to say that it was easy by any kind of long shot. I mean, you know, physically not going near any of the booze. I mean, you know, my girlfriend's a gin drinker, so there's bottles of gin in the house. I was like, that's going down the sink. And she was like, fine. She was amazing. She really helped me get my crap in order. But
that's great.
The physical abstention wasn't necessarily that difficult, but dealing with like the stuff that it was numbing, that was one hell of a roller coaster. But really, the main thing that got me through, strangely, was, like I say, it was about this time last year that my dad passed away. And I just sat there one day and was really honest with myself. It's like, you've been, you know, you sat and watched his life get taken away from him, but he did not want to go one little bit. He did not want to go. And I've been given the gift of being here with good health, with the ability to live another day. Mm. I'm squandering it like that.
Yeah.
That is just throwing everything back in his face, throwing everything back in the face of the universe, of everything. It's just like you're being given that gift and you're squandering it just by, you know, by pissing it away and just wasting your life.
Yeah.
And amazing. That was a strong motivation. And then these things had to bubble up to the surface. You know, there were tears, there were tantrums, there was times of isolation. There was all of those different layers that I had to go through. But it was that underlying motivation that actually enabled me to go through it. And when I got to the other side of it, the tranquility that came.
Yeah.
And the even mood and the small banal things just didn't concern me anymore, just didn't bother me anymore. It was almost utopian, I would say. Like, that's, I know that kind of sounds a little bit like hyperbole, but it's true. It's once you've actually got the opportunity to stare your shadow self in the face and beat it into submission, what comes after is wonderful.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Let's just get back to talking about food for a bit. I mean, in the short space of time we've got, what can you recommend for us in terms of just great nutrition that we can all go for?
You know what, I think the biggest thing is to not overthink what you're doing. When it comes to eating well, it really is very simple. In terms of the science and all of the individual nuances and stuff, that is as complex as you like. And you think it's complicated for the layperson, wait till you've studied it in depth. You get more questions with more mind-bending stuff than you could ever possibly imagine. But in terms of the actual day-to-day application, it is so easy. And you follow the evidence trail, and the evidence trail always tells us the same thing. Just get back to whole foods, you know. Yeah. Fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, whole grains, oily fish, you know, that those kinds of things. Just simple, wholesome foods in their whole state that haven't been tampered with, that haven't been heavily processed.
Yeah.
Try and cook from scratch if you can. And that is as complex as it needs be for most of us, for 99% of us. I mean, obviously, if you've got issues like celiac, or you've got very, very specific dietary needs that are related to some kind of medical need, then of course those kind of things change. But you'd be working with a practitioner that would be guiding you through that. For most of us that just want to improve our health, that's the thing. Because what I will say, I mean, I always use this example. If you look at all the different diets that are out there, whether it's like a paleo diet, macrobiotic diet, vegan diet, carnivore diet, whatever, all of these things are drastically, drastically different from each other.
Yeah.
Incredibly different. Yet all of them seem to produce these incredible transformations in people's health. You always read these stories about people that have followed these diets and had these incredible transformational experiences. And you're like, how? Wow. What do I actually do? There's one thing that unifies every single one of these diets.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
Can I guess? Is it that they're not eating processed foods?
They're cutting out the crap that's making us sick in the first place. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the key. Cut that
Love
rubbish
it.
Out.
Love it. Yeah.
Whole foods and Yeah, that's it. That's as complex as it needs to.
But what about the sugar then? We have to touch briefly on that because one of the things I hear absolutely all the time is that you ditch the booze and then the sugar monster appears and you find yourself craving sugar. And that can be hard. And I always tell people, listen, focus on ditching the alcohol to start with. Sure. But having said that, obviously we can't be piling in copious amounts of crap sugar. And we definitely don't want artificial sweeteners in their place. So what do you recommend for the sweet tooth?
Obviously, one of the things that alcohol is a sugar source. I mean, alcohol is a sugar. So when you're basically on the blood sugar roller coaster, when you're coming off alcohol, it's the blood sugar roller coaster where you're getting the peaks and troughs. And the antidote to that is protein. Always, it's protein.
A bit of protein with every meal, would you say?
Yeah, always a good quality protein. And that, you know, I mean, me personally, I follow a plant-based diet. So that would be tofu or beans or things like that, or tempeh. Or, you know, if you eat meat, good quality cuts of meat, fish, eggs, dairy produce, all of those kind of things, they've got the protein, they've got the fat. What that does is basically any food that you've got in your stomach, the protein and fat content will slow down the rate at which it leaves the stomach. So the glucose absorption takes place in the small intestine after the food has left the stomach, and it leaves in small little globules. But as these globules leave the stomach, the proteolytic digestion is basically switched off, and then all of the glucose content or the sugar content will start to be liberated at that point by like pancreatic enzymes and a lot of the enzymes that are hanging around in that portion of the digestive tract. And that's where absorption of that sugar will take place. If you eat something that's just like a slice of white bread, because there's no fiber, there's no real protein content to speak of, that won't be in the stomach for very long. That will get into the small intestine. And because it doesn't take any effort to liberate those sugars, you'll just get a rush of blood sugar because they'll be liberated from that foodstuff very, very quickly. When you're eating a whole foods diet that's very, very high in fiber and you've got good quality proteins, that food will take a huge amount of digestive effort to break down. So it can keep you feeling fuller for longer, but blood sugar is drip fed. Yeah. So rather than getting that roller coaster, you're getting a nice, even blood sugar level because just small amounts of that glucose is being liberated in each kind of sitting, just small amounts. And the bloodstream is constantly being fed with an amount that it can cope with. Great. So you're not going to get the insulin spikes. You're just going to get a nice, even blood sugar. That will take the cravings away.
Yeah, fantastic. I know you've got, just masses of amazing recipes in your books. And now you've got this new project where, tell us about your new thing where we can get all these, you know, amazing recipes from you.
Yeah, so it's a new thing. It's called the Medicinal Chef Recipe Club, because so many people I speak to day in, day out are just completely and utterly confused. And, you know, I get people that have got the books and stuff and they're like, oh, we want more, we need more. What do I do? Everyone's confused. And I thought, well, why not let me take over? You know, just your evening meals, what you do for breakfast and lunch, you know, you kind of guide yourself. And if you can commit to one meal a day that's built around sound nutritional principles,
great,
then you'll be doing yourself so many favors. So I created this thing that Monday to Friday, I've developed the recipes for them. They follow that throughout the week. They're supporting the health of every single body system. So there's dishes in there. Across that 5-day period, you'll be supporting the health of the brain and the nervous system, the cardiovascular system, the digestive system, immune system, and so on and so on. Everything will be taken care of. They get the 5 recipes and they get a shopping list.
Fantastic.
Yeah, they don't even have to trawl through the recipes and write the list. It's done. Print it out, take it to the supermarket, sorted, done. And then there's a mini course in there as well that kind of shows people what the basics of healthy eating actually are, what these things mean, how to tackle this from a day-to-day thing.
Fantastic. So tell us where we find that information then, Del. What's the website?
Head to my website, which is themedicinalchef.co.uk.
Yep.
And if you go to online programs, just click on online programs and then you'll see all the different programs I've got. I've got all sorts of courses on there. But this one, it's called the Medicinal Chef's Recipe Club.
Love it. Dale, thank you so much. You've been such a fantastic guest. I absolutely love it and I wish you well. And I tell you what, let's make a date now. We'll talk again at the same time next year when you'll be 2 years sober and loving it and still and helping so many more people. That's amazing. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you, Dale. And the book, as I say, is called Fakeaways, Healthy, Budget-Friendly Takeaways for Everyday Home Cooking, published by Hamlin. And of course, as Dale says, he's got that little recipe membership club as well, which is a fantastic idea. Really, really great. And of course, Dale is on the telly. You can see him a lot. And hopefully he's going to be on Radio 2 as well. It'd be great to interview Dale again. I feel like I'm interviewing him a lot lately, but that's cool. So just a reminder then, if you didn't hear earlier, go back and check out that little drinks review. And what you need to go is, do is go to the show notes for this episode, and you'll see that Sainsbury's offering there an exclusive redemption code for you. So you'll see the link and you can click on that link and check out the terms and conditions. And as part of your next online shop, we've got up to 200 free packs to give away, free 4 packs of the Dash sparkling water infused with wonky lemons. So check out that link and get your online shopping in. I mean, you know, what's not to like coming up to Christmas? We've all got plenty of shopping to do, right? So thank you again to Sainsbury's for sponsoring this episode. I had great fun trying those drinks. Coming up in the next few shows, let me think who my guests are. I have got Dr. Hannah Short. I've mentioned Dr. Hannah Short before, who's a really great, fascinating GP. I love interviewing GPs who are really across health and well-being. And that sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? I actually, interestingly enough, I heard someone say the other day, oh, my brother's a GP and he's not interested in health at all. I knew what she meant, but it didn't come across very well. But anyway, when you do meet a GP who is totally across holistic health and well-being, it really is amazing. And Dr. Hannah Short is like that. So very much looking forward to bringing you that interview where she talks about women's health and well-being. It's going to be a great interview. On a different note completely, I'm going to be doing an interview with someone talking about grief, because, you know, I think it was last week I was talking about how these stats around loneliness and isolation, and how so many people in that situation are more likely to just turn to drink, basically. And of course, it can be the same when people are suffering from grief and they don't have the right kind of outlets for that. So I'm going to be interviewing someone around grief, and no doubt we'll do something nicely Christmassy. Don't forget, you can find me in all the usual places at Janie Lee Grace on Instagram, at Janie Lee Grace Loves on Facebook. I'm on Twitter as well, at Janie Lee Grace. You know where to email me. Don't forget, by the way, we've got some competitions and all sorts of stuff. There's always new blogs out. And obviously, it goes without saying, if you'd like to check out the Sober Club, you are very welcome to join us in the Sober Club. We have exclusive content there. There's a little bit of extra content from Dale Pinnock. Usually the podcast guests do us a bit of bonus content. So in there at the moment, we have, loads of stuff. Lots of stuff about nutrition, about mindset, about well-being, about finding your purpose, about relationships. And we're just about to upload that exclusive piece from Dale on exactly how you boost your liver health, particularly after you've ditched drinking. I'll see you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Janie Lee Grace. Please go to thesoberclub.com. Listen to more podcasts, read our blogs, enter our competitions, grab yourself a free PDF, Self-Care in Sobriety, and check out our online community,